Hello and welcome. I'm Patrick Curtis, your host and chief monkey, and this is the Wall Street Oasis podcast. Join me as I talk to some of the community's most successful and inspirational members to gain valuable insight into different career paths and life in general. Let's get to it. In this episode, member Lateral Monkey shares her story from a non-target school all the way to the front office at a bulge bracket investment bank. Find out what helped her land a rare sophomore summer internship in capital markets and why she despised it, why she stayed at the same bank for her junior summer, and what saved her time and time again. This is part one of a two-part series. Enjoy. Lateral Monkey, thanks so much for joining the Wall Street Oasis podcast.
Thank you for having me.
So it'd be great if you could just give the listeners a brief overview of your background.
Sure. So I graduated from a small liberal arts college in 2016. I'm originally from the Midwest, the Rust Belt, and I majored in economics with a minor in a regional studies, focus. And I ended up going to a bulge bracket investment bank. I did two summers in investment banking during college. In between, I also co-founded a startup focused on the healthcare industry. I did an AMA on this in Wall Street Oasis, but I ended up leaving my investment banking job to go to a more back office oriented role. It was a strategy role focused on the implementation of artificial intelligence processes on the bank. And then I have since actually left that role. I backpacked around the world for a few months, and I am now looking at opportunities. So I've had a bit of a varied background, done a bunch of different things, slightly unconventional background for a person. I think I should also mention that I am a woman of color. So definitely not the most typical profile for an investment banker, but it's been fun.
That's interesting. So we have a lot to dig into there. Let's start all the way back at the non-target school. Was there any on-campus recruiting? Was it, how did you know investment banking was your dream job? No, just kidding. How did you know that investment banking was an option even coming from this small school?
So I actually had no knowledge in investment banking. I graduated from high school. I wanted to be a human rights attorney. I wanted to save the world, specifically women. And I ended up taking economics courses. It was part of the international relations discipline at my school. And that's what I ironically thought that I would major in. And I wrote a paper, and it was on a Cardinal Health acquisition. And basically, my economics professor took that paper and gave it to an alum that was visiting that day. She was a director at a bulge bracket bank and said, "You need to read this." So I suppose I did a good job on that paper, but she read it and she actually chased me down on my campus green. And I oh my goodness, I can only imagine what she saw that day because I don't think I had gotten sleep.
Were you in like, were you in like sweatpants and the typical like college attire being just like the slob like I was?
It's so much worse. I had just attended a protest, so I was wearing a protest t-shirt. And I had, and that's why I hadn't slept, because I had spent an entire night prepping posters. So,
oh my gosh.
So she introduced herself and she talked to me and she said, "Have you heard of investment banking?" And I said, "Oh, like those are the guys that caused the financial crisis, right? In 2008. And like, I've read all about introductions on Wall Street Oasis and none of them have included this. I can't imagine that made the best impression.
That's funny.
But she kind of talked to me about it and she said, "No, it'd be such a great opportunity. You should really look at it. You seem to have a good head for the business." So I started going to info sessions on campus. We had info sessions for, I can list just a few of the banks. The main one was Bank of America, Merrill Lynch. Mm-hmm. A couple other banks used to recruit about 10, 15 years ago, but as those alums, in some cases died out, in some cases retired, those opportunities went away.
Got
so
it.
I would say that my school was a semi-target because we had one school recruiting, but if I'm being honest with you, they only took 1 to 2 people every year from my entire graduating class.
But we'll call it a semi-target because there's probably a very small percentage of the kids actually targeting this career anyways, right?
hard.
Well, actually, that's not necessarily
Not
true.
true. Okay.
We actually had a very large number of kids that were interested, and the reason why is because banks are one of the few organizations that's still sponsored, and they take people from a broad array of backgrounds. So international students were super, super interested in banking. I think where they struggled was recruiting domestic students, because if I'm being honest with you, my protest attire was a lot more typical for a student on my campus than a suit and, you know, my resume printed out and going to an investment banking info session.
So from that first meeting where, you know, you kind of made that probably maybe negative impression, but it didn't seem like she cared, to the banker. I don't know if she was a VP of some sort. And she convinced you to come to the dark side and join investment banking, or like, how did it happen? How did it, like, what was the next step? Or was it like you were basically, they were so impressed with the paper that you were given a super day right away?
Right.
You know, how did it all go down?
So the first step was discovering Investopedia existed. and that was me just Googling what is investment banking, what is the process. And it's kind of funny because at first when I attended the info sessions, I had no understanding of how competitive the process was. It wasn't until I started, this is my freshman year. So let me give you a little bit of background, right?
Sure.
So this is my freshman year of college. It's second semester. Like, I'm prepared to go abroad for a summer to study a language. And I'm sitting here thinking, oh, investment banking, like, this is something that I could totally just walk into. No, that is not the case. I think it was during that summer that I kind of solidified my desire to do this, because what everyone had told me was, oh, this is such a great opportunity. You're going to meet a lot of great people. And for a kid coming from a small town, that was so, so attractive to me. The opportunity to brand myself, you know, without necessarily going to a Harvard, Yale, Princeton, or something like that. Mm-hmm. So the first step after that was really just figuring out who I could talk to. So I started with kids who had interned in an investment bank and not gotten offers, because I figured I could make a horrible impression on them and it wouldn't be that big of a deal because we didn't get offers anyway.
How did you screen for kids who had an internship and didn't get an offer? You like put it into LinkedIn and just started reaching out?
One thing you learn as a college freshman, especially a college freshman woman, is how to stalk people really effectively on the internet.
Okay.
You do this with all Tinder matches. You do this with your professors. So I'll be honest with you. I just completely stalked them. You know, I looked up if they didn't have like photos celebrating an offer on Facebook, they probably didn't get it. You know,
That
actually turned out to be super accurate. If they didn't have it on LinkedIn, they probably didn't get it. That was probably the easiest way to check.
Mm-hmm.
And also just like through the grapevine.
So
right?
Did you graduate to people who actually did get an offer? So you started out like just trying to get information from the people who didn't, so that if you messed up, you didn't sound stupid.
Well, I did graduate with kids who did get offers.
Okay.
But the nice thing about the whole process is that, at least on my campus, kids were, you know, if you like met one person and then you met a second person and it was clear that you had growth, it wasn't that big of a deal. And it was the kids who didn't get offers who were honestly the most lenient. That's something I realized later on. But my immediate logic, again, I was not a very smart college student. My immediate logic was, oh, these people didn't get offers, so like, I can just like ask them all my dumb questions. Not the greatest approach, not something I'd recommend, but it's something I did.
Okay. It sounds like it helped you at least get
a tremendous amount.
Okay.
I learned the do's and don'ts. You know, people were so honest with me. Like there were things like, this is what you don't do. And it was like a full list of things I was actually doing. And these are things you do. And like, it was simple things like, you know, don't ask questions that are Googleable. One person actually helped me put together a list of questions that I should ask like MDs and directors. So like more like long range, like industry specific, like what's the outlook of the industry type of questions. And then stuff that you ask like analysts and associates.
So you,
I think VPs are the hardest.
You'd like sound smart, basically, basically show that you've done your research, stuff like that.
Precisely. Yeah. And that, I would say that process took about a month. So that was like August to like mid-September, and then around mid-September, and this is my sophomore year,
yep.
So we're speeding up a little, around mid-September is when I started reaching out to people. So I started with alums from my college, and they were great, and then I just started getting super aggressive. And this is where I really honed, I think I developed skills. Honestly, they're the most valuable skills that I developed in college. Like those skills carried me through every single career change I have made. And it was really just how to talk to people, how to read people, how to understand cues. You know, if a relationship isn't a click, I understood when that didn't happen and like when to let it go. Those are really important things. I by the end of it, I mean, I had talked to something like 200, 250 plus bankers on Wall Street.
Wow.
And, you know, kids used to ask me all the time, how are you talking to XYZ person? And I would like not even have any idea because like they're just in such a chain of people. You know, that I talked to, that I was like, I have no idea where this introduction even came from.
So do you feel like you were just able to lever each connection you made, you were able to get one or two more from that? Like you'd always follow up at the end and
Yeah. So I think the advice that I usually give people is this: you have to approach every conversation with this idea that you can't waste their time and you want to make it interesting for them. So like, remember I talked about those stalking skills? Well, I've reprised them with this. So let's say I'm talking to, you know, John Doe, and he's an analyst in, I'm going to give you an actual case. So
sure.
He's an analyst in leveraged finance. He went to a school that was actually kind of geographically close to mine. Oh, look, you know, he did tennis. My whole family is obsessed with tennis. You know, why don't I research, like, what's the latest, you know, I'm not that familiar with tennis. What's the latest, like, grand slam happening? Who won? What's the significance of it?
Right.
You know, and kind of integrate that into a conversation so I make it a little fun for him. And I think that, like, people... Here's the thing that people don't understand. Everybody knows the tricks you're using. They weren't born yesterday and they did the exact same thing themselves. But they appreciate when they see that you're putting in the effort to do it.
Right.
You know?
It's like you're not just like dialing cold and completely cold and aren't prepared, that type of thing.
Exactly. I never ask anything more than an introduction. I would usually leave it open. So I would always start with like, sometimes like with certain phone calls, if I knew someone was a little drifty, I used to always say, here's like the schematic of this call, right? Mm-hmm. This was with analysts and associates, never senior bankers. Like, okay, I'm going to ask you three questions about the recruiting process. I'm going to ask you three questions about the, you know, analyst life and like what it means to be a really good analyst. And then if time is left over, you know, I would love to ask you a couple more questions about whatever. Or no, it was three questions about them, three questions about the recruiting process, and three questions about analyst life. That was how I did it.
And like, how long do those calls typically take? That sounds like a lot of time.
It is. I never got past the second question.
Right. That's what I would figure. That's what I was about to say. I'm like, if you actually got through all of those, that's a lot. Sorry? I was like, that's going to be like an hour long conversation. I'm surprised. Did you put that in the initial email and it didn't scare off a lot of people? Your conversion rate was high?
I didn't put it in the initial email. I said it in the initial like 1 minute of the call. I would be like, time we have, this is what I want to cover. This is only with a very specific type of person.
Mm-hmm.
Like this is with a guy who seemed a little drifty, maybe did a bunch of weird stuff on LinkedIn. And like, that was actually like a solid number. I would say that was 50% of my calls. And it went over really well because people like, especially bankers, they like structure.
Right.
They're in this field for a reason. So when I said something like that, they were like, okay, she's like thought through this call. She like knows what she's doing. Yada, yada, yada. You know what I mean?
Right.
And I never got past the second question. It was almost always a conversation about you and your journey and your experience and thinking. And like, there were a lot of things that I could sympathize with. So like, if somebody talks about being a history major and not knowing like basic math stuff, like that's something I would be like, oh yeah, I totally get that. Like regional studies major over here. I understand that, even though like I did advanced mathematics in high school, but we're not going to talk about. If somebody was like on the pre-med track, I was like, oh my goodness, I wanted to be a doctor. Like the duration of my time in high school, my dad's a doctor. I'm Asian. This is how it works.
Yeah. That's funny.
So like there are little things like that you can sympathize with people and it makes them more human.
Very cool. So tell me a little bit about, so you started kind of reaching out, you had all those networking calls. I assume, were you able to meet anybody in person? Did you do a trip or was it all just over the phone?
Yeah. So I did a lot of trips to New York City and I was also broke. So I had a couple of friends who lived in New York and I would just crash on their couches. And it was actually really kind of awful because I would say things like in a call where I thought like, or not even in a call, in an email where I thought, you know, I maybe talked to them 1 to 2 times, maybe 3 times, and I would be like, hey, I'm in New York City on this date, and I would be like simultaneously booking my like Chinatown bus tickets for $17 to get from Massachusetts to New York City, and be like, oh yeah, I'm going to be in New York on these dates, like, let's talk.
And
I would like sleep on couches, and it was, oh my goodness, it was horrendous. There was one point where I had 2 outfits for networking, and I used to swap the sweaters, and they would look like new outfits. And I realized I met 25 people at JP Morgan, and I realized I kept meeting people in the same outfit. So I started like changing it up, and I remember I like dove into a Gap and near Times Square and like bought a new sweater just so people wouldn't think I couldn't afford another suit.
That's
pretty awful.
So funny. Well, no, good. I mean, it's awesome hustle. I remember those old Chinatown buses. I used to make that trip as well. I think it was like, there was like the Peter Pan, there was the Lucky Star, there was the, yeah, half of them like blow up and turn on fire, so you got to be careful, ready to run out. But
exactly. It was so bad.
It's not the best way to travel, but okay, so you're doing all these trips. It sounds like you're hustling. You're gonna make it, obviously, because it sounds like you got really determined. Like it's just something you decided. And has that always been the case with you? Like when you figure out you want something and you just go after it.
Yeah, I tend to be obsessive. Mm-hmm. So everyone has their own approach to doing things. My approach is like knock down walls. Mm-hmm. And I was so determined. I remember there were a lot of kids getting interviews with banks. And, you know, I just remember getting so disillusioned because here I am, like, very much farther ahead than just about any kid, any kid who was comparable, like sophomore, junior, or senior. Mm-hmm. And I was, like, not getting where I needed to be. And
why do you think that was? Just the school?
I mean, it's slightly controversial to say, but I think, like, especially at certain schools, like, they're looking for a very specific type of person, and they're looking for it to round out their classes. And that, like, a lot of times I didn't fit that profile necessarily. And I also think the other reason, and the far bigger reason, was that I was super young. You know, we're talking about me doing this recruiting when I was 19 years old. I was a sophomore. I was trying my best to, you know, get my foot in the door, and people were like, why aren't you doing this when you were a junior? The process wasn't what it is now. So now you have to recruit a year out, year and a half out. My sister just successfully got a sales and training gig. And by the way, she is like a 3.115. So like her getting that from a non-target was insane. But
I want to interview, I want to interview her too.
She's amazing. I mean, I'll be honest with you. She is so amazing. She did the exact things I did. Like, she was super aggressive with networking.
You're trying to get a summer. You're basically trying to get a sophomore summer internship, right? And so you're like a year early. People are like, what are you doing? This isn't the time. You weren't using any diversity or accelerated recruiting programs or anything like that at this point, or you were?
I did some. I did a couple, but I'm a Asian woman, and so that wasn't necessarily, again, the profile that people were looking for, was the diversity hire.
Got it.
But again, like, every single person who was at the diversity events, regardless of what made them diverse, was insanely qualified and just super brilliant and super, super smart. So in no way do I want to diminish those accomplishments, because that would be awful of me. That said, like, again, people were looking for a certain profile, especially for the diversity events. And I don't mean that as in race. I mean that more as in, you know, school and things like that.
Got it. School and, like, finance major or whatever, people who've shown, like, a drive for that. Got it.
Yeah, and they were looking for, like, the finance major. They were looking for the kid, you know, that had gone to Harvard and also started a... I don't know. I met this kid at one diversity event that absolutely blew my mind. He had founded like a microfinance organization, mm-hmm. and it was a whole thing. And I remember questioning, like, why are you here?
You're hustling anyways. So what happens? You don't get a summer internship your sophomore year. What's the outcome?
So I did get it. I think the main reason I got it was because of the networking. And so basically what happens is I get dinged from like 3 banks, and that is like heartbreaking for me. Mm-hmm. I, after this one rejection from Bank of America Merrill Lynch, I remember just curling up in my bed, and I spent an entire weekend crying my eyes out because there was another girl who had gotten it from my school, and she had not talked to a single banker. And right before her interview, I had to explain to her what investment banking was, and it killed me on the inside.
Oh my gosh.
her dad was like a major, major trader on Wall Street, and like, she was the sweetest girl, but I just remember doing that, and I just, like, something inside me just died.
Yeah. So you're like, this is not fair.
Not okay.
Yeah.
So I ended up, like, crying my eyes out on the weekend, and then I sent in the application for the bank that I eventually ended up working for, and I got invited for an interview. And I remember, like, the alum from that particular bank called me, and it was in December, and it was like right before we were all leaving for holiday, and I was on this cruise ship, and I'm terrified of heights, and I'm leaning over the rail of the cruise ship before it like left the dock to continue getting reception and talk to her, and I was like, oh my goodness, I was so nauseous.
You're lucky you didn't like lose your breakfast when you were talking to them.
Oh my goodness, that was so bad. There's so many moments in this where the call where I've said that was terrible, but that's really what it is. And I think if there's any takeaway from my experience, I think it really is relationships are everything. I think that's true for anybody. Mm-hmm. If you are a young person and you are from a non-target or a semi-target like me, and if you don't fit a certain profile, and if you're, you know, you didn't grow up, you know, knowing about this industry, and, you know, I had to, honestly, when I got my internship, I called my parents and they were devastated. Like, my mom cried for 3 hours because she was like, I cannot believe you're becoming a bank teller. I put you in college and you're becoming a bank teller. Are you joking?
That's,
and I had
so
to explain
funny
to her what investment banking was.
I love it. I love it.
It was a whole thing.
You know, there's an ad. Have you seen those really old Adam the Analyst, like cartoons? Where he's trying to explain to us. I got to show you that. I'll link to it in the show notes. It's Adam the Analyst. It's like these really funny monotone old cartoons where like Adam the Analyst is, he's like trying to explain to people like it's funny situations. One of them's with his mom trying to explain to her what an investment banker does.
No, it's terrible.
It's great.
All these kids. I remember like in my incoming intern class, all these kids are like, oh yeah, like my parents are so happy about this. And I'm sitting here like, my parents think I can't pay rent. Like, that's the situation
that's
right
so
now.
Funny. So they get over it. You end up accepting, obviously. And tell me about that summer. What was it like?
It was terrible. I absolutely hated it.
Tell me why.
So I was in capital markets, and I was the first woman on that desk in 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of difficult stuff that happened. I mean, I grew up in a post 9/11 world in a very tiny town that is 97% white. And I am more than used to insensitive comments and bad things happening. Like when I was a little girl in third grade, my teacher wouldn't let me stand up for the Pledge of Allegiance because, you know, on the anniversary of 9/11, because she said my people had done this. So we're not talking about someone who's sensitive here. Like, I'm not at all, but there were some awful, awful things that were said to me during that summer. I came away super demoralized. But one thing
I'm surprised that this isn't that long ago, right? I'm surprised that that's still, I guess maybe it's just group dependent. Like it's a super, like different groups are a little bit more progressive than others, but it sounds like that one's back from the 80s or something.
Like, no, it absolutely is.
Yeah.
And it's like, I ended up staying with the same firm for years. If you think about it, like I was there for those 2 summers and then I was there for another 2 years, really 2.5 years after. And I stayed there for a while. Mm-hmm. And it really is group dependent. You know, you can join one group and they're absolutely fantastic, and you can join another group and they're like descended from Satan. Terrible.
So can you tell me like some of the stuff that happened to you? Was it just like, was it racist, sexist? What was it more just like?
It was mainly racist and sexist, honestly. And I didn't tell anybody because it's really difficult to go to HR with these kinds of things. Like people will say, oh, you totally can.
Yeah, you can. But the reality is you can't.
You don't want to be the person that does that.
Yeah, it's really hard to. You know, it's really hard to.
It's hard. It's really hard. And, you know, There were some things that were said to me that were really, really nasty, and I'm not going to repeat because they were so inappropriate. Mm-hmm. Let's keep this podcast G-rated.
I can put the explicit mark on it actually after, so it's not a problem. But yeah, go ahead. No, that's fine. You don't have to. You're comfortable sharing, it's fine.
I'll save it, but it was just really unacceptable. Some people use, I can give you a few examples. Some people use the C word,
mm-hmm.
not okay.
No.
When we were talking about certain things, I heard, this was also the same year that the Supreme Court legalized gay marriage.
Mm-hmm.
That was a really big deal. I heard some homophobic slurs from mm-hmm. my group. Like, I'm talking like 80s stuff, like nasty stuff.
Yeah.
You know, there was a holiday from my faith that we were celebrating, and I never took off a day of work. I worked insane hours. I worked coverage hours, even though I was in a capital markets group, and there were some really disparaging comments about that, which I was like, I don't know why that should even be something you discuss, because frankly, I haven't confided to anybody at this firm that I'm celebrating it.
Right.
And it was nasty stuff, and I left super demoralized. I was like, oh my goodness. I cried my eyes out when I didn't get it. I cried my eyes out of happiness when I finally got it, you know, when they called me with my offer.
Right.
So a lot of tears. And I did it for this. This is terrible.
Yeah.
And
so this is like your experiences after that first sophomore summer. So I'm surprised you came back. Was it more like, hey, I just got to see this through and be strong? And what did you, I guess, I assume you wanted to get to a different group, right? And you thought, hey, maybe it'll be better at a different group.
Yeah.
And how did you even know to ask for that?
So there were two things. The first one was I literally knew after like the fourth or fifth week that there was no way I was getting an offer just based on my group liking me. That was not going to happen. So I networked like a demon. And, mm-hmm. and I do mean like a demon. I had no shame. I mm-hmm. would email heads of groups or stuff like that, and I would make it very well known that I was getting coffee with them. I'm talking about stuff like walking up to like my VP and being like, hey, do you know where so-and-so's office is located? Because I can't find it on this floor. But like, again, that got the message across.
Right. So you were basically, you were showing that you had no fear, that you had nothing to lose. You were going to just basically go up and network and be aggressive.
Yeah, and I was really aggressive about it.
Were you using that as a signal of some sort? It seems like you were trying to make that clear.
A little bit. I was using it as a signal. I honestly, part of me didn't even care if I got the offer. Part of me was just like, I'm going to squeeze out as many relationships as I can, because my recruiting process taught me the importance of relationships.
Yep.
But I think that scared them enough, because there was one analyst that I was really close to in my group who later on actually ended up getting fired. But that's a story for another time.
Mm-hmm.
He literally told me, he was like, we didn't like, nobody wanted to have to explain why we fired you with all these people that you were grabbing coffee with. So we just like gave you the offer because we just didn't want to deal with it. Like one intern was not worth it.
Got
so
it.
I was like, okay, that works.
That's a really important lesson right there. They're just like, well, she's too well connected. Even just from a summer internship, you got too well connected into the firm that you did. They didn't want to have to explain to like these three senior people why you.
Oh my goodness. I was so good about it. I remember there was one guy that just drank a ton of veggie juice, and I brought in veggie juice in the morning for the duration of that. I'm not even joking. He was like a global head of like such and such. I'm not going to say
what.
So it's a little
funny.
Identifying. And I was like trading recipes with him. And then there was another guy who I found whose daughter and granddaughter had like attended my school. And I found that out like just through like the grapevine.
Yep.
And I like made sure to like trade a relationship with him. And I used to meet him all the time. And he was a really gregarious guy. So he would like yell my name across the floor. Cause like capital market style, you sit on a trading style floor.
Yep.
Oh my goodness. It was, now that I think back on that, I was like, wow, that was really smart. And then also a big part of me is you had massive cones to pull down.
Yes, you did. Yes, you did at what, 20 years old?
Yeah, but I think that's a small town kid coming out, like this scrappy small town kid being like, what do I really have to lose? Like worst comes to worst, my parents will absolutely support me switching to being a doctor.
If you had not done that, you would have not gotten the offer. The group did not like you. Pretty obvious, right? So like you just didn't you just didn't fit in. You weren't one of the guys, right? So it seems pretty obvious you wouldn't you would have it would have been a struggle. Do you feel like that's the case for most groups? Do you feel like it sounds like, my guess is that most young women in your situation would have actually really struggled in that seat, just because a lot of people at 20 years old, I know at least myself at 20 wouldn't have the cojones to go up to heads of groups and trading and be like, hey, like, let me get you some juice and, you know, making all these connections. I know you had kind of honed that skill over the previous year, but talk to me a little about that, about how other women can kind of, if and maybe not, not as aggressive as you, but how, what else can they do? What can they do in your situation if they don't have the confidence that you had to do that? How else can they protect themselves?
That's really, really tough. I think the first thing is to make sure your work is unimpeachable. I think that's the biggest thing. I would talk to HR quite a bit. I would be in constant discourse with your recruiting partner, and not just about like, oh, the group doesn't like me. Like, don't say that. Don't ever say that to HR.
Right.
That's not a good idea. I think it's more,
you don't want to be causing headaches for HR, but you're saying being in touch with HR about like different groups and where, what your future is. And that's
a different group, talking to different groups. And then I think, and this is maybe a little counterintuitive, I think that any, if you're going to be in banking, you need to know how to talk to people and you need to develop that confidence. I don't care if you are a summer analyst or if you are a first year associate that graduated from Harvard, you need to know how to talk to people. And so I think the biggest thing is, if you're in coverage, this wouldn't work, but if you're in capital markets, you need to approach someone senior. I'm talking a director or someone, and you need to be brutally honest. Like, talk to your staffer first, figure out how your performance is, go to your director, go to someone senior and say, I've talked to my staffer, here's some of the things that I'm thinking about my performance. Here's some of the things that like other people have said about my performance. Here's the projects I've worked on. What do you think? What can I do to be one of the best analysts you have ever seen? And when you put it really directly like that, some directors like that, some directors really dislike that. It depends. I would never do that in a coverage situation.
Why? Why is it so different? Why is it so different to capital markets to coverage?
Capital markets is a lot flatter in hierarchy. The hierarchy is still there, but you're sitting with your director and your MD, and a camaraderie develops there, and they're more open to talking to juniors. Whereas in coverage, the directors and the MDs are behind closed doors, as are the VPs in some situations. That's very much firm specific.
Yep. You're like in a bullpen with all the juniors and the associate analysts and associates and interns are kind of like the they're in the cages in the middle of the firm, and the directors and MDs.
If you're in the analyst bullpen, I think what's more important, I mean, you obviously have to understand group dynamics, but I think it's more important to understand the analyst bullpen. So understanding like who's the best associate, who's the best analyst, who do I need to work with, who absolutely sucks, who does this director really hate, which was something I had to learn the hard way. Mm-hmm. And like those dynamics are super important. But when you're within a capital markets group, they'll maybe have like 1 to 2 analysts. It just depends. I have not really seen capital markets groups with 3 analysts, but that's happened, I'm sure. So, you know, within those tinier groups, you can talk to seniors much, much more easily.
Makes sense.
The seniors will anyways be interacting with them a lot. So I think you should just lay all your cards out on the table, because again, what do you really have to lose? You know, lay your cards out on the table and say, here's what I think my performance is. Here's how it actually is. Here's how the projects I'm working on. What do you think? What can I do to be the best analyst I can possibly be? I'm collecting feedback from everyone, and just talk to them. If you don't have a very high EQ, again, just be upfront, and people are going to respect that.
Sorry, you said it cut out. If you don't have a very high EQ, do what?
If you don't have a very high EQ, don't play games.
Like, don't play games. Don't play games.
Terrible idea.
Yeah, yeah. Just be direct.
Don't try to do what I
did. Yeah. Don't do what you did. Okay.
No, don't do what I did.
Well, it protected you in a sense. It protected. Did the rest of the group kind of get a sense and like know what you were doing?
Yeah, I'm sure they did. I mean, these guys are much smarter than I am. They have played far more complex games than I have. I'm certain they knew exactly what I was doing, but what were they going to do to stop me?
Yeah,
were they going to sit me at my desk and be like, you can't meet with a senior person. Yeah, good luck explaining that one.
Yeah, true. fair enough. So, okay, so, yeah. So tell me, so you kind of went through a really tough sophomore summer analyst gig, and then how did you kind of angle for a different group? Were you trying to get to coverage? Was that the goal, or what was the end goal?
Yeah, so I didn't really have to angle because they required you to leave the group you were in your first summer anyway if you were a sophomore intern.
Got it. Okay.
So that was pretty great. But actually, the way I got my junior summer is actually quite funny. So I had developed all of these really great relationships with really, really senior people my first summer, right?
Yep.
Which was awesome. And, you know, I actually, that paid off massively because when I started looking at opportunities, I knew I wanted to go to a group that had a great culture and one that had amazing deal flow. I wanted one of those like prestige style groups. And there were two groups that I was immediately pointed to. For the sake of anonymity, I'm not going to say which ones they were.
Yeah.
But one was significantly more fratty. The other was like, they had their frat moments, but they were for people, I think, that group was more for people that were gregarious. Like, outgoing, had their thing, but weren't necessarily all the same.
Right.
And I fit in much. So call it group one and group two. I fit in much more with group two.
Yep.
And I went to these managing directors that I had gotten to know, one of whom, I didn't want to go to the alum from my school, that person, because I had cultivated a great relationship with her, but I didn't want to keep asking her for stuff.
Yep.
Like, fatigue real when you keep asking people for stuff. Like, yep. Don't do that.
Yep.
Too
many favors.
I went to other people, so
So
I went to these other people, and I was like, you know, I really want to go to this group. And they were like, oh, I got you. Like, we got this. And they basically CC'd the entire junior analyst class. Not junior analyst class, but like the entire junior analyst like pool from that group. A good number of associates. And, you know, and like this woman who was like a really big deal in the bank. Again, for the sake of anonymity, I'm not going to reveal who it was.
Yep.
And CC'd my old group MD, which I thought was hilarious, and was like, and basically put down, like, I can confirm that she was excellent. And then my MD, my ex-MD put down, yes, she handled herself with great maturity, and she was very detail-oriented and said all this nice stuff about me. I told my boyfriend later, I was like, I'm going to print out that email that my MD, my ex-MD wrote, like, nice things about me, and I'm going to frame it in the next apartment we move into.
Is it because, do you feel like the ex-MD was saying that because he felt his arm was, he couldn't disagree?
Pressured. Super pressured. Because, again, everything in banking is about, like, capital, right? And I mean that kind of as a pun, social capital, to be specific.
Yeah.
His group had not been performing well for a fairly long time. I'm just going to be honest.
Yep.
It was one of the worst groups in the bank. And so, yeah, he felt his arm was twisted because he was talking to, you know, people that were in one of the best groups in the bank. What was he going to say? Oh, yeah, this MD is giving her this great recommendation. He's full of shit. Like, that's not true.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was not going to happen.
Right.
There was a lot of peer pressure there. So I ended up getting into that group. No surprise there. And I had a fantastic summer. That summer was awesome. And I, you know, never accept an offer on the spot. That's my advice to any young summer analyst. Don't sign on the spot.
But wait, before you get to that, the summer, let's talk a little bit about that. What made it so great?
Yeah. The people. It's always the people.
And did you feel like the work was really different though, right? Because you're now in coverage, were you doing modeling? Yeah. And did you feel like coming from a liberal arts college or small college, did you feel like you were prepped? You were ready?
No.
How did you survive that?
I came in by myself on the weekend and I would just practice.
Okay.
And if I didn't come in on the weekend, because there was one time I came in on the weekend, there were always analysts there, but this one particular analyst staffed me and I was like, oh crap. So I started going to the public library and I would just practice. And I put in horrendous hours. That summer. Oh my goodness.
What were you working?
I was dating my boyfriend at the time and he was like, I never saw you. And that's the truth. But because of that, I became one of the most popular summer analysts in that group.
When were you getting in during the day and when did you leave at night or in the next morning?
So I was getting in around 9 a.m. Mm-hmm. and I was leaving. It depended. I could leave anywhere between midnight and 3 a.m. Mm-hmm. There was one time I stayed until 5 a.m. That was pretty awful.
Yep.
I remember I stayed until 5 a.m. and we were allowed to come in at 11 a.m. And I met my associate, who is such a nice guy, like in the Union Square subway station. And he just kind of waved to me and was like, hello there. You don't look rested at all. And I said, no, I'm not.
You're like, I'm going home. I'm not going into the office right now. That's
funny. I was like, no, we were both going into the office together. And it was actually very funny. But I went from, I think, being one of those like average summer analysts, my first, like, I would say 3 weeks, to being a really, really, really good summer analyst. And again, the gender ratio was not improved, for the record.
Yeah.
You know, we had no women in the senior team.
Yeah.
None. We had barely any. We had no women in the VTs either, now that I think about it.
But tell me about like that transition before we get into like the gender ratio. What, the first 3 weeks, was it just because you weren't like, was it the actual technical skills that you were building? Is that why? Or was it because you just, you kind of got in with the right people at the right team and you knew how to work with them?
I think this was entirely merit-based. I just had the skills. I had the, I was super enthusiastic. Mm-hmm. I would always ask everyone, what can I do to help you? What can I do to help you? What can I do to help you? And then I would focus on absolutely killing it in whatever I did. And like, you're going to make mistakes as part of it, but the trick is be super detail oriented. And I know everyone does that, so I'm going to flesh that out a little. Like, make sure your numbers are as accurate as you can make them. Make sure the format looks clean, right? If you need, like, there is no such thing as reinventing the wheel in banking. You can find a precedent. Go and check the precedent, you know?
Yeah.
How do you check
your numbers? How do you make, does any tips on to make sure that your numbers are right? I know I have one, if honestly, you don't.
No, it's okay. Honestly, for me, I would pull out, so we got these models that were for practice, and I would pull out and I would punch in like whatever, you know, I would just like trade in for the numbers I had and see if I got similar numbers. That's really it. I would just use a model that had already been done that I knew was perfect, and I would punch in the numbers and I would see if they were somewhat close.
When you were, did you ever have to print out? Did you ever print out analyses and like look at it on paper? I felt like that would always help me, like just sense checking it on paper versus.
Yeah, I did that a lot.
And then when you're turning like a PowerPoint, they would have this thing where like you'd look at the turns and then you'd confirm every single little thing done. You'd highlight each one as you went through. Did they do that as well?
Yep.
Basically. Yeah.
Just like did all of that.
Super detail oriented.
I put it in PowerPoint. I a lot of times I would also, they had these like ways that you could print out. Do you remember how, because you were in banking as well, do you remember how like on the Excel sheet you have like the pages and the one page or two page and you can just like print out a sheet in Excel and double check it?
Yep.
I did that a lot.
Yeah.
That was something I did.
And then you see a number that makes no sense. You're like, wait a second. Let me go back. Yeah.
I did a lot of just like, I wanted to catch stupid mistakes. So the precedent model stuff is really what I did. Mm-hmm. Because if I miss a certain detail here or there, fine, right?
Yeah.
But I want to make sure that my basic stuff is right.
Yeah.
Formatting. I mean, no one starts you with a model. Like, maybe some crazy people do, but like, for the most part, nobody like threw a model at me my first day and was like, go do this.
Right.
You know, it was more like, I was throwing like formatting stuff or like basic stuff, like put together a PID, you know, stuff like that.
Right.
And then the responsibilities grew over time. And honestly, by the time I was ending my summer, you know, it's always good when you hear people say things like, oh, why can't we just keep you? Why can't you just start now? Like, do you really need to go back for your senior year?
Right.
That's a really good sign. That's when you know you're going to get the offer. And I did get the offer.
But you didn't accept it right away.
No, of course not.
Thanks to you, my listeners at Wall Street Oasis. If you have any suggestions whatsoever, please don't hesitate to send them my way, Patrick@wallstreetoasis.com. Until next time.